Hello, hello, and welcome back to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Sweatman, and on this episode, we're continuing our look at queer cinema for Pride Month. I'm joined by filmmaker Evelyn Landau for a discussion about the Netflix documentary Disclosure, which is about the history of trans representation in movies and TV. In addition to that, since this episode is dropping just after Father's Day, I'll give my review of a new drama starring Kevin Hart called Fatherhood, which is also streaming on Netflix. Stick around.
Excuse me. She's been like crying for hours.
Sorry, but this is a group for new mothers.
On that sign out there, it says parents. I'm a parent and I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I need help.
I don't know how you gonna do this.
If you could have only one parent, I wish you could have had your mom. Because she would have been better at it. And mommy was the best.
Go to sleep, Maddie.
Maddie, go to sleep. Maddie, go to sleep.
Go to sleep, Maddie.
It's not working, though. Well,
she's not a clapper.
Matthew, darling, we think you should move back to Minnesota. You're all alone here.
She needs family.
Raising a child is a non-stop, all-day, all-night affair.
You look great. Don't say it just to be saying it. You look like a king. King of the slain.
That was a bit of the trailer for the new film Fatherhood, starring Kevin Hart, Alfre Woodard, and Lil Ray Howery. It's a drama about a new father named Matt who finds himself alone when his wife Liz suddenly dies shortly after giving birth to their first child. The story follows Matt as he learns to care for his new baby, handle life as a widower, deal with his in-laws, and balance life and work. The film hit Netflix just in time for Father's Day. My big question going into this film was, can Kevin Hart do drama? He's done more serious roles a few times before, but this was my first time seeing him outside of his usual joke-a-minute comedic persona. So, can he do drama? Yeah, pretty much. He's good here, and there's enough natural comedy in the life of a parent that there are several laughs, though the film largely has a pretty serious tone. In fact, the best moments in this film are the comedic ones. Matt's best friend, Jordan, is played by Lil Ray Howery. Lil Ray Howery has got to be one of the most likable comedic actors working today. Everything I've seen him in, he's just incredibly charming. We first meet Jordan just after Liz's funeral, and he's around for a lot of Matt's big parenting moments. Their scenes are almost always funny. That's sadly not the case for scenes with their other friend, Oscar, played by Anthony Carrigan. I've seen Carrigan on the HBO series Barry, and he's really strong there. He's very funny. That's not the case here. Almost all of his jokes fall flat, and it really feels like he was miscast. I'm focusing so much on the comedy because the drama in this film is not its strong suit. About 80% of the film is drama. The parenting scenes are incredibly predictable. He struggles with diapers, he struggles with doing hair, he struggles folding up the stroller. Basically every story beat you would expect from a movie like this is here. The one dramatic storyline that is somewhat unique and compelling is Matt's relationship with his mother-in-law Marion, played by Alfre Woodard. He's not sure if he'll make an adequate father figure, and she's not sure of that either. She asks him repeatedly to quit his job and move closer to family. Their back and forth is pretty interesting in the film's first half. That ends up leading to the film's main climactic drama at the end, and sadly, it doesn't work at all. The situation feels completely manufactured. Some of the decisions characters make feel very out of character and just unbelievable. That said, the performances from Kevin Hart, from Lil Ray Howery, from Alfre Woodard are mostly really good, and there's enough laughs to get you by. So yes, this film is predictable and overly sentimental and cheesy. The dialogue is hammy. It's filled with platitudes, but it is really damn sweet. If you're in the mood for something easy and heartwarming, you could do worse. But if you're looking for a really good movie about fatherhood, I'd actually recommend something else. Some of my favorite movies about being a dad, I really like Dan in Real Life, or I also really like the scenes about fatherhood in the movie Boyhood. If you're looking for a really good dad movie, maybe watch one of those instead. Fatherhood is now streaming on Netflix.
How does it look?
I think it's a new look. I think it's a new hairstyle that can catch on if given a chance.
Mr. Logan, Madeline doesn't have a mother to model after.
I am well aware of what my daughter doesn't have.
You think you can do this, but you can't?
No, man, you're right. I can't do it. But you know what? I'm going to do it because I'm a father. God, Maddie. Thank God today I got there in time to hold her hand. Well, Liz, I didn't get to hold her hand. She was gone.
It's always just us. Other people have more people.
I just want to do what your mom would have wanted me to do.
You're trying to make everything perfect. But we don't have any control.
Wherever you are, I want to go there.
Wherever you are, I want to go there too.
Somebody's cutting onions or something close to us or something. I don't know.
Hey, y'all gotta stop it!
Oh.
She would be so proud of you.
Two kisses. One for mommy.
It's Pride Month, and we're dedicating our June episodes to queer cinema. Listen to the previous episode for a great discussion with Rance Collins of the 1961 film The Children's Hour. But today we're changing gears and looking at a modern film, and one focused on trans people. The film is called Disclosure, and it's an award-winning documentary all about the history of trans representation in movies and TV. The film features interviews with dozens of trans filmmakers, actors, and historians. There are good and bad examples of representation, discussions of how much things have changed, and personal stories of trans experiences. It's fascinating, and I think probably very educational for most people. And it's streaming now on Netflix. Today on the show, I'm joined by a filmmaker named Evelyn Landau. Evelyn is a filmmaker and musician out of Chicago. And she's trans. In fact, Evelyn has documented some of her experiences around gender on film. We'll talk about some of her film projects before we get into our discussion of Disclosure. Evelyn, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're on. So we met through a mutual friend, Connor Smith, and I had him on for First Cow a few months ago. And basically, I'd sent him a list of movies that, you know, pick one from the list if you want to talk about one of these or suggest your own. And he picked First Cow, but he saw Disclosure was on the list and was like, I don't think I'd be the right person, but I know someone who might want to, and connected us. And so it's been in the works for a few months. I'm glad it's finally happening. So yeah, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Yeah, it's funny that this filmmaker community is like small, but there's a lot of different people doing a lot of different things, and we all know each other.
Yeah, it is really interesting. So, and you're up in Chicago. Connor is from Arkansas, and so that's how I met him. So it's an interesting, interesting connection. But I'm glad to have met you, and we've been able to email back and forth, and I've become a fan of your work too. So not only are you a musician, I've listened to a lot of your music, but then I've seen one of your short films, which is called Cautious Birth. Tell us about that, and then also you have a feature coming up, hopefully in the next few years. What's going on there?
Yeah. Well, thanks for asking. So basically I started, my thesis film is Cautious Birth, and that was my thesis in college. I was going to be a chemistry major, realized that film was my passion about halfway through, and made the easy choice to start taking film classes instead of doing chemistry labs all day.
Nice.
And around that time when I started learning about like the process of filmmaking, I also started to learn about gender, about my own gender. And those two kind of coincided. And the film is about me coming out as trans. But the thing that actually happened was that I came out to myself during the like recording process of the film.
Wow.
Caught that part on tape, and that's like the cornerstone of the film. And so I felt like that was pretty special, and I kind of had a self-confidence in it that I hadn't had in my earlier work that was just kind of like trying to be like a movie, trying to be cool. Mm-hmm. This is felt more personal, and that's kind of the vein that I've been working in since then. And so this next film that's coming out, hopefully, like you said, in the next couple of years, is called Vacation, and it's about my transition and about my trans experience, but also about a mental health crisis that happened near the end of college. So basically right after that first film came out, where I was feeling this wonderful sense of euphoria about being trans and about the trans experience and about embracing this part of myself. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of was hit with the reality of what that would be like, and mm-hmm. the sort of the ways in which the world would be different for me now with that knowledge. And so this film is a little bit more serious, darker side of things, but still about the love that I have for myself, that I have for the people around me, that my community has had for me, to kind of bring me through that first bumpy road into being a more authentic version of myself.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That sounds fascinating. So Cautious Birth is, of course, the one I've seen, and it's deeply personal. It's really, it feels brave. I think it's, even as you're watching it, that, I don't know, I kind of get goosebumps, like, oh my goodness, this is, a really intense kind of thing. It's really well made, and I really, I'm just glad I've seen it, and I hope more people are able to see it. I'm excited about this next one. Yeah.
Thank you. And just to plug it a little bit, it's on YouTube. If you just search Cautious Birth, Evelyn Landau, Details is the name of the band that I released it under. It should show up on YouTube. And it's just like 7 minutes long. It's a quick watch, but I think it's an important thing to see, because there's not a lot of stuff like it, exactly like it out there.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was struck by is, first of all, I'll link it in the show notes, because it'll hopefully be easy to find there. But yeah, I think there's a lot of things. I mean, like the film we're going to talk about today, Disclosure, looking at sort of trans representation and some experiences on film. But I don't know, in your film Cautious Birth, it's, looking at like kind of the moment that it all begins, and that feels pretty unique. And I think even for people who, feel like they have more to learn about gender, which, I mean, I feel like I have more to learn about gender too, but I think it can be a learning tool in that way too. So yes, I highly encourage people to check that out.
Thank you. Cool.
Yeah. Well, I guess without further ado, let's talk about Disclosure.
I can't even tell you how many times I've been in public space, particularly early in my transition, when I would walk into a subway car and people would just burst into laughter. And I think people have been trained to have that reaction. According to a study from GLAAD, 80% of Americans don't actually personally know someone who is transgender. So most of the information that Americans get about who transgender people are, what our lives are and are about, comes from the media.
We've been around since there was footage. You just have to look for us.
Can we all just talk about D.W. Griffith for a minute? Not only is he incredibly racist, but he turned gender non-conforming people into the joke.
So it's like you can't have like queer trans people and blackness in the same space at the same time. So what's it say about my queer trans black ass?
They've died so many times they can't even count on camera.
I've been a prostitute one, prostitute two, call girl, hooker.
The Crying Game created a ripple effect.
You are a trans person who existed, made people physically ill. Was the way in which my favorite movie as a child ended.
There are lots of ugly things about our history, but I think we have to know them.
I have been beaten. I have been thrown in jail for gay liberation, and you all treat me this way?
There is a one-word solution to almost all the problems in trans media. We just need more. And that way, the occasional clumsy representation wouldn't matter as much, because it wouldn't be all that there is.
You see a fierceness that's coming up now. That's because we ain't got nothing to lose.
These are my sisters up here, but the struggle is real.
The ways in which trans people have been represented have suggested that we're mentally ill, that we don't exist. And yet here we are, and we've always been here.
All All right, let's talk about Disclosure. So this is a documentary on Netflix. It's all about trans representation. One of the surprising things for me was just how far back into film history it goes. It looks at some of the very early examples of the way things were gendered on film way back in the early 20th century. And it goes through lots of examples all the way up to today. It just came out last year, so it's very current. There are interviews with dozens of trans people, at filmmakers and actors, and historians, kind of discussing all these things. And it ends up being just a really broad look, not only at trans representation, but trans experiences. And because those two things are often linked, as the film kind of demonstrates. But I thought it was really a strong film. I wanted to first get kind of your general impressions, Evelyn. Do you think this documentary does a good job tackling the subject matter?
Yeah, it definitely does. There's so many more films that could be made in this vein, though. Mm-hmm. Like that's what it struck me about it, was that it's very clean. It's very, for lack of a better word, it's a very like sanitary version of like what this could be. Mm-hmm. And I think, and that's not a dig, like I think it's a wonderfully made, important movie for everybody to see, but like it felt like I didn't have an impression of it. I don't even remember it that well. I've now seen it twice, actually. Mm-hmm. Once very recently, but I don't remember large parts of it, just because it feels so authentic to me and so so much like what I already experience and what I already feel about trans representation in the media, that it almost doesn't leave an impression with me other than that it was true.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And that there could be so much more, I guess. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And I definitely felt like, I always love film history stuff. Like, man, I wish I could see a whole movie or read a whole book just about, and I'm sure this book is out there, just about these kinds of things, you know, in early film. And but yeah, I see what you mean. It's kind of, it's easy in a way. Like it's kind of easy breezy, which you might not expect because it's kind of heavy in some places. But
yes, yeah. I was going to say that actually. That the on Netflix it says something like uplifting in one of the hashtags of like how you can find it, and I was like, is it though?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
the tone is definitely even and like palatable, but like what they're talking about is pretty horrific and like in many parts.
Yeah,
which I thought was also an interesting tone to strike. I mean, I think that makes it more watchable for people who don't want like an issue film; they just want like an educational film.
Yeah,
and I think that there's definitely a place for that in our like discourse.
Yeah, and that's a good point. It almost could be more at home in like a classroom than I don't know, like a hard-hitting, you know, kind of documentary festival or something like that, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I think both places would be great for it, and I know that if I saw this in high school, things would have been different for me earlier. You know, like seeing this kind of representation, like meta representation about representation, is really eye-opening, I think, in a personal way as well as in like a broader educational sense.
Yeah, that's a good way to say that. I was surprised by just how many guests there were. Like, I think it's a lot of the fun for me, or fun, maybe not the right word, a lot of the things I liked about this was hearing from so many different trans filmmakers. And like, I think of the literally dozens of people interviewed, I was previously aware of maybe five or six of them. So it was very educational for me, and I've seen it twice as well now. And I feel like the second time I could kind of key into some of the key points a little bit better. But I really like too, the very early on, I think Laverne Cox says it, that trans people develop a keen sense of whether they're being, you know, laughing with or laughing at, whether a show is laughing with trans people or laughing at trans people. And I think that's a key thing that, you know, throughout the history that we see, there's examples of both. And it is sometimes it might not be obvious to a cis person, but there's a difference and the difference matters. And I think that's one interesting aspect of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that recognition starts in movies like this, and eventually it will be as commonplace as other forms of discrimination in media like are in retrospect. Like we can point out other things more readily than we can trans representation. Like I saw something in The Office recently and I was like, oh, I know The Office isn't like great. Yeah. But I don't remember there being jokes like that and about trans people specifically. And it was like, it was a moment of recognition for me, just knowing that my eye is going to be more discerning at this point than other people's. But with effort like this applied, like, people will start to see the difference themselves and not have to point it out to them.
Absolutely. I think that's true. You know, speaking as a cis person, that I've become much more aware of the things that I'm watching. Like, they show a clip even from, I think about like sitcoms from 90s and early 2000s. I always used to watch How I Met Your Mother when it was on. I really liked that show. They show a clip from that and kind of revisiting some of that recently, realizing, yeah, not only the transphobia is there, a lot of fat phobia and body shaming stuff. Like, it's interesting. It's not that old of a show, but I think you're right. I think it's only going to get better and better. And look at what you mentioned about other discrimination. Like, we as a culture are pretty good now, I think, at recognizing when something's a harmful representation of a gay person. Or, I mean, like, we know that blackface is a problem as a society now, and that just doesn't fly. And yet with trans representation, it's the awareness is not quite there yet, but I think it is coming, and I think that's an interesting thing to look at too.
Yeah, I just saw something today. Riz Ahmed just gave a speech recently on YouTube. It's a beautiful speech about Islamophobia and about that issue. And he was saying that, like, we will see, like, those sorts of stereotypes, be, like the terrorist stereotype or something, you know, as harmful and as blatant as that, is present in current media right now. And it will be seen at some point with the same lens as like minstrelsy, is what he says. And I thought that was to the point that you just made, in another context. I mean, it's a multi-pronged thing. It's not just with trans people, and it's not just with specifically maybe white trans people wanting the same rights as like white gay people. Like, there's a liberal way to apply this information where it's like, well, eventually it'll get better, and then we'll be able to focus on other things. And it's like, no, it's all part of the same struggle for representation, accurate representation, loving representation, caring representation, in all forms.
Yeah. Yeah. Jen Richards in the documentary makes a point somewhat similar, or at least along the same lines, maybe kind of tangential to that, but it's, just about like, if there was more, if we had more and more and more, then we would be able, I think we'd be able to recognize problematic ones quicker, as a whole, like as a society. But then it wouldn't be quite such a big deal if there was, you know, someone messed it up, so to speak, because there's just a higher quantity. But it's, right now it's so few and far between that
the stakes are higher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. So it goes through lots of different films and TV, again, going way back in history to all the way up to now. Any of the things that they showed clips from, were you like a particular fan of before the documentary showed?
Yeah. I mean, a few, actually. Silence of the Lambs was one of my favorite movies in college. Mm. The thing that they do where they look straight to camera, I mean, it's such a simple thing, but like, oof, it really got me, like in my soul. And then also M. Butterfly was a big one for me. Mm-hmm. I think I saw it before I knew I was trans. I saw it before I knew a lot about gender for myself and in general. And it awoke something in me. Like, it definitely stirred something in me to see, because I guess the quote unquote, the twist is that the woman in love interest in the story is actually a man in disguise, a spy. And I didn't see the twist coming, which, you know, okay, that's my experience. But like, that sort of, neither does the main character. And the main character has this outsized reaction to that. Not of wanting to harm that person, but instead of feeling something turning in himself. And I don't think that the film necessarily does a good or bad job of whatever that is, but like, you know, it was important to me.
Yeah, that's interesting. As far as, I have not seen In Butterfly, but I think the first like trans character that I really like became really aware of, I think, was actually Orange is the New Black with Laverne Cox. Like, I'd seen things before that played with gender and stuff, but the first time that I really kind of keyed into, like, okay, this is a trans person playing a trans person. And I think that was a lot of people's experience. You know, Laverne Cox kind of blew up after that. But that was one for me that was an early one for me. But then Jen Richards is in a show called Mrs. Fletcher, and I watched that recently. I don't think they really talk about that in the film, but they show a couple clips of her in it, and she's really great in that. They talk about To Kill a Mockingbird, which that's a favorite of mine, and just kind of looking at, you know, Scout as tomboy, and one of the interesting things is, like, a lot of the people interviewed talk about seeing, you know, people in drag or something early on in their lives and, like, having some sort of a connection to it. Maybe, awakening something, maybe that's the way you said, or mm-hmm. Just identifying with it in a way, even at a really young age. Laverne Cox talks about that, and then, you know, many of the actors talk about that as well. I was going to ask you, kind of, was there anything... And I okayed this question with Evelyn before we recorded, by the way, listeners.
Let it be known.
Yes. This might be something to just, Ruth, to spring on someone. But was there anything for you growing up, you mentioned In Butterfly, was there anything else that you found, like, meaningful or identified with in a way before transitioning?
Yeah. So I was thinking about this question. And I mean, I don't have the like, traditional trans kid's story of being like, I always knew, and mm-hmm. and like, I, whenever I saw someone in a character, I would identify with that character. But, like, I was thinking, there's kind of a weird example is growing up, like, grade school, Code Lyoko. Are you familiar with this program? Mm-mm. It's a TV show. It's an anime TV show, kids TV show, and the most of the TV show is in 2D animation, and then the fight scenes are on 3D animation. And I'll tell you, I don't know, something about that, something about bodies, something about fungibility of reality, that popped up while I was thinking about this question. But in, like, a more concrete or tangible sense, like, I remember seeing Gone Girl in college. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those examples of media where the gender binary is heightened actually does the same thing as when it's being... obscured, or when it's being played with, like, I saw Gone Girl and I, like, got it. I was like, oh, that woman is a bad person. and she is not nice to men. And I was like, I get that. Something about that I really get. And at the time I didn't have words for it, but looking back, I'm like, oh, she's just a hero to me. Like, I really like her.
So something about, like, the feminine energy, like, idolizing that in a way. So is that sort of along
the right lines? Yes, the feminine energy that breaks out of the mold of what's acceptable for women to be like.
Like, strong women. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. And strong women, and it also being, like, strong and evil. Like, like that, her being the bad guy and the good guy at the same time, you know, broke some boundaries for me. I don't know what exactly. But yeah, so that's what comes to mind. Those odd examples.
That's really interesting. Wow.
Can I ask this might not work, and you can cut this out if this doesn't work. But were there movies or TV shows for you growing up that were like, oh, I'm cis? Like, oh, I really identify with men? Interesting with being question. A man?
Well, I don't have, like, a great answer for that, but somewhat related is, so I'm actually in a film club that we watch a movie and do a Zoom call every week. And this last week, I'd seen this movie once before, and it's a movie they talk about in Disclosure, and it's Paris is Burning. I watched it for the first time last year and then watched it again last week, and it's a really fascinating movie. So for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's about like the ball culture. It's all gay and trans people, mostly people of color, in New York in the 1980s. And it's like this just really strong subculture that I knew nothing about. Now it's become pretty influential. Like, everyone's ripped it off. You, like, Madonna got made Vogue, that directly lifted from their culture. And it's just this really beautiful story of people finding joy amidst all the hard things they're going through. And the film doesn't shy away from those either. So it's I think it's a really powerful film. In Disclosure, they even show, you know, there's sort of a dark, I think there's a film called Paris is Burning, The Dark Side, and a lot of the people aren't happy with the way they're represented in it. And so it's complicated there too. So Paris is Burning is not the thing I want to talk about, actually, but we watched that as a film club, and then we were talking in film club about our the first time we became aware of drag culture at all. And I hadn't really thought about this in years, but it suddenly brought to mind, oh my goodness, I used to watch stand-up comedy a lot in college, and I watched Eddie Izzard. And I think their pronouns are they now. I believe that's right. I'll double check that. But they often, Eddie Izzard, like, you know, generally male presenting, but they would do stand up and drag often. And it was the first time I'd really, like, I knew kind of what, you know, drag was. I didn't really understand it. I mean, it was condemned in my, you know, upbringing. Like, the people that, you know, taught me about the world were not fans. I grew up really conservative. Seeing Eddie Izzard in drag, and I kind of for the first time understood that, okay, the purpose of maybe dressing up this way is to kind of poke at gender stereotypes. I didn't have the language then for, like, gender as a construct, but I started to have just a little bit of understanding in that. And I think that, looking back, that was probably really influential as kind of a first step in, like, understanding that gender, the gender binary is, you know, man-made and all of that. And so much has come from that. So that's not exactly an answer to your question, but I think that is an early time that I kind of became really aware of gender. Just in general, I think, I don't know, like, I wasn't good at sports, and like, I was made fun of that. I was called, like, gay slurs because of that, and, you know, junior high and things. And I think from an early age, I was like, okay, well, what is a man supposed to be? Like, you know, and I think still as a culture, we're even trying to say, okay, what's masculinity apart from toxic masculinity? And so those are big questions. I don't have the answers to them, but I think from an early age, I kind of, knew that, you know, I wasn't the manliest man, you know, and what does it look like to be, what does it mean for me to be a man in, you know, junior high or high school or in America now. So I don't know, that's a lot of things, but does that sort of somewhat answer your question a little bit?
Yes, that's beautiful. No, it's nice to just hear you talk about your awareness of gender in yourself and the way that it happened through media, because I think like, you can miss out on, like, this movie is important because representation in the media is not like an arbitrary thing. It's not like, oh, well, we chose to pick this about the trans experience. It's like, most of what we get about gender is us looking in a mirror of some kind, whether it's on a silver screen or on the TV or looking at other people like drag performers. We get a lot of that information as it's reflected back to us because it's in many ways an external thing, even though it's obviously also internal. I don't know where I'm going with that.
No, yeah, but, no, that's
but it's for everybody. I mean, it's for cis people and trans people, and everybody inside and outside of those umbrellas. Representation is how we form that awareness of what that is.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, just in a general sense, like, gender and sexuality has been, and just kind of broader understandings of that has been I don't know, like, looking at my, like, spiritual growth over the last 10 years, that's been a really big part of it. It's just coming to better understandings of those things and, yeah, kind of deconstructing the things I, you know, knew about that or believed about that growing up. So anyway, it's something that's really important to me. But that kind of transitions into our next question. I was going to ask, was there anything that really shocked you or surprised you about this film? And my answer was going to be a stat that's thrown out pretty early on, is that 80% of Americans don't personally know a trans person. And when I really think about that, it's like, that's not that surprising, I guess, but it was shocking to just hear that. But I mean, like, there's so many people that I, you know, knew growing up and from the communities I grew up in, I'm sure that's the case for them. And that was the case for me until, you know, 10 years ago or something. I worked alongside some trans people and kind of started to learn, you know, a little bit of what that experience is. And, anyway, yes. I think it is, that's been huge too. Like, knowing trans people has been a big deal for me, but also you're right. So because 80% of Americans don't know a trans person, we look at the media. And that's what this documentary is saying. And that's kind of what you're saying, is like, representation is the place that we learn. And so when you look at the history of representation, and there is so many bad examples that, you know, it almost makes sense that, it sadly makes sense that the acceptance is not there the way it needs to be. But yeah, was there anything about the film that you found surprising?
Yeah, I mean, I think the statistics were not as surprising to me as one would hope. And that is definitely a thing that I weighed heavily on me right at the beginning of my realization. You would say transition, I guess, but like my social transition was a time where I kind of went through a lot of learning about that sort of thing. So that wasn't as surprising, but I guess the thing that's popping up, I don't know if it's surprising or not, but I felt was that CSI anecdote where the actress was laying down acting dead and the director is talking all wrong and everyone's doing everything wrong. And she just decides to go with it because this isn't the moment, you know, and I felt that, you know, I think that there were a couple of moments like that, stories where it was like, very believable that would happen. So maybe not shocking in that way, but always freshly surprising to know how something can go wrong in that way.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And that there's several examples, and they talk about how this is like a trope. Sadly, this is a trope of, you know, most of a lot of the trans people on TV are characters are sex workers, and they get murdered. And like, that's just a thing that has become so common. And it's, of course, that colors the perception that people have of trans people. So that's really interesting. Were there any other kind of favorite moments? Anything that just stuck out to you, good or bad, about the film?
It's weird. I really don't remember that many specific moments in the film. I'm wondering if there are any that you have that maybe I will also
absolutely. And you know, I took notes as I was going. It's the way it's made. It moves quickly and it's kind of breezy, and I feel like it hits you with a lot of different things. So it is easy to somehow skirt over things. But yeah, I noted a few things. I mean, I like that some of the interviewees disagree with each other, and like the film will show kind of differing viewpoints on the same thing. Like they talk about D.W. Griffith, and one person talks about, I'm trying to remember the name of the film. I mean, obviously D.W. Griffith is such a controversial figure anyway. But in one of, I thought I wrote the name down. Oh, Judith of Bethulia is the film. And there's basically a character who seems to be genderqueer or something. It's not exactly clear, a silent film. And then one person talks about how, you know, it's powerful that they're there, and then the next person interviewed about the same film talks about how it's a problematic thing. And so you get some different complex kind of viewpoints about things. In general, I really like any time someone talks about like seeing trans people for the first time on screen, and as we talked about, kind of awakening something in them or making some sort of realization. I thought that was fascinating to hear.
Yes.
And then Jen Richards talks about, I don't know, just being able to see the good and the bad in things. Like she talks about, she can look back at some of these things that she watched growing up and see like, okay, yes, this is a problem for X, Y, and Z reason. But at the time I was just happy to see a trans person on TV. And so like, there is, it's hard to say something is all good or all bad, you know?
Right. And I think that trans people get to have that both ways. There's certain people who can enjoy things, and there's certain people who maybe shouldn't. Problematic things. And specifically in this way, like if you see it, if I as a trans person see someone on screen that's not being depicted well, I can still see the humanity in them because I recognize it in myself in a way that I can say, I wish that representation didn't exist. And also I'm glad I saw it.
Another moment I kind of adding to the complexity of this conversation is there's a moment where Laverne Cox talks about, they spend a lot of time talking about Nip Tuck and some of the, I mean, really terrible things that are in that show. Laverne Cox breaks down a scene and why it's horrific. But then talking about Ryan Murphy, who made that show, you know, and seeing the ways he's changed his ways just like showing that there's room for growth in this, and things are getting better in a lot of ways. That was kind of cool to hear Laverne Cox sort of like give her blessing in a way to say, yeah, he did this terrible thing, but you know, people can change and understandings can change.
Yeah. That's really nice. I mean, I, am wanting to say something about like a progressive, or what is it, a narrative of progression, I guess, like this idea that like things will get better is like not exactly it. Like if we apply pressure and if we're consistent about our demands, like we can see things change as long as we keep our eye on them is kind of how I feel about it. And it's always great when a person changes face and is able to do something better than they had done it before. Yeah. But I think that conversations like what we're having now and like this movie are necessary for that sort of change to continue. It's not a given that representation will just get better over time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think they might have made that point in the movie too.
Yeah, I think they did. Yeah. Yeah. It's a constant struggle. And I think Jen Richards says something about like the more representation, it's like this weird and cyclical, like it gets better and it gets worse kind of thing, because more representation can embolden people more, but the bolder people are, the more they're going to get shut down. And so like it becomes more dangerous in a way the bolder you are, but we have to be bold to make the changes. And so it's just it's not an easy fight, I guess, is the point there. But I thought that was an interesting way she put that.
Yeah, I love that. I feel that struggle personally, like the thing of like, every day am I going to be visible? Am I going to fight that fight with myself? Am I going to be bold? And am I going to face their consequences? What will the consequences be today? It's a daily struggle for people whose visibility is dangerous. So it's nice to have it highlighted in that way too.
Wow. Yeah. Another story that I thought was really powerful in it is Sandra Caldwell's story, who I've seen her in things, and I just never knew that she was trans. And she's a kind of older woman of color, and she's interviewed a few, like you see her a few times before we get her full story. But you know, the word stealth is a word that was actually new to me before I saw this film the first time.
Oh wow!
Like, you know, living, you know, I guess passing for and high, I don't know if I'm saying the right word, but basically like keeping your gender identity a secret for your own safety. But you know, she grew up a long time ago. She's in her later years now, and didn't come out until the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, and was on screen for decades, you know. And it's so interesting to hear her story and the way she like she never imagined she would be able to be public about her gender identity. And yeah, it's just really powerful to hear that from her.
Wow. Yeah.
And then I have a long list here. Sorry. And then
that's great. No, I'm loving it.
Two other Jen Richards moments that she talks about different things. One is she really explains the problem well of why is it a problem for cis men to play trans women on film?
Oof.
And because it's a complicated thing, but and I'm not going to explain it half as well as she does, so watch the movie. But basically she like, this is leading directly to violence against trans women, because when we see a man dress as a woman on film, and then we see them on the award show or on TV and they're a man, that leads to the idea that trans women are just men in disguise. But when we see like Laverne Cox on screen, and then we see her on, you know, a new show being her fabulous self, like she is incredibly feminine and all that, it deflates that idea that trans women are really men. And basically the other is adding to it. And so we can have like a beautiful performance from Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl, but it's adding to the idea that that trans women aren't really women, and that's what leads to violence. So I thought that was a really, she breaks it down really simply and easily.
Yeah, I think you did a very good job just then.
Thank you.
That was really good. Yeah, and she does a great job. She also, this is, I apologize for saying this, but also this is kind of cool. She has seen Cautious Birth.
She has? What?
Yes, she might not remember it, but she was at a film festival and her short film showed next to, or a short film that she was in showed next to mine. And I met her afterwards very briefly, and she said like something along the lines of like, good job.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it was really beautiful. And I'm glad that it happened, and I love her very much.
That's amazing. Yeah. I don't know all that much about her career, but she seems really incredible. Yeah. As I mentioned, I saw her in Mrs. Fletcher, the HBO show, which I really like. And she's like a side character, and she's trans, and that, I think that comes up very briefly, but it's just kind of nice to have that in the background about a person. Like, she just gets to be a character and interact with people, and there's something powerful about that too, that it's like, it doesn't have to be like a big dramatic trans story for to have a trans person in it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That brought to mind Euphoria, that does that a little bit. I haven't seen the whole series. It was very intense for me. but the Jules character is trans, and you don't get told it specifically right away, and it's just part of who she is and like part of her experience. It's not erased, but it's also not the defining trait of her character.
Interesting.
Jen Richardson is now doing work on a show, I believe, called Clarice, that is like deconstructing, reconstructing the legacy of the Buffalo Bill character in Silence of the Lambs.
I heard of that show. I didn't know anything about it. That's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm not sure exactly what her role is, but I know that she's doing great work, and I am happy that she's doing what she's doing.
That's great. Yeah. Well, and that goes into the last thing that I had on my list here of like my favorite moments is also her. And she talks about, so she appears in a documentary, I Am Kate, which is about Caitlyn Jenner. And they even say, okay, complicated figure, but this film,
right.
This film isn't really even about Caitlyn Jenner as much as it's just about kind of trans issues. And I haven't seen it, but they show some clips from it. But she talks about, there's like a scene with, I guess like a support group almost, and there's several people and like trans people and their loved ones, and they have some parents there, and there's basically a father who is just like incredibly supportive of his young daughter. I don't even know how young, but I think like very, very young age realized that they were trans, and this father's just so like I'm parenting a unicorn, like this is the most special thing, and it's just so affirming and kind of full of love. And Jen Richards in the interview talking about it, like really breaks down, was like, that father saw his child in a way that my parents couldn't see me, that I couldn't see me. And then like how huge that could have been. And like, it was almost, as she puts it again, so much more beautifully, but talking about, like accepting that there are people in her life that are not gonna be affirming of her. And her gender identity, but hearing this father be so passionate, it was like really incredibly difficult for her, because you know, if this father can feel this way, why can't the people in my life? And how emotional of a moment that was for her. So that was probably the most powerful moment in the film for me, is hearing her talk about that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I actually saw that in a TikTok, on her TikTok the other day. She just clipped that clip and put it on her TikTok. And yeah, it's very powerful. It's amazing to me how casually and wonderfully she can just bare her soul and her life, and just, and she knows that that's what she's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you don't get a lot of people like that. Like, that's a very special person. To be able to do that, to want to do that, to have the strength to do that, and then just continue with the interview like nothing's happened.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's incredibly powerful. And I definitely recommend watching this just to see, you know, trans people talking about being trans. I think it's a really powerful thing. So
yes.
Well, do you have any final thoughts, Evelyn, about this film before we kind of wrap up?
I'm glad I got to see it again. I'm glad I got to talk about it with you.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. And I would recommend that people see it.
Yes. Easy to get to. It's right on Netflix. I think it's like an hour and a half, so it's not a long watch either. You can do it. You can do it. So I highly encourage people to do that. Really quick before we wrap up, you said something on the phone the other day about social media. Did you want to bring that up at all?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about how, when you asked about what's the media that has influenced me as a trans person, or has led me into more insight into myself or into trans issues. And I thought of social media immediately, because there's more young trans creators there than in traditional media. And they're just sharing their lives. Like, again, doing the brave, heroic, beautiful work of just being honest and sharing on TikTok and on Instagram. And it's not even people that are far away necessarily. Like, there are people that I know personally whose social medias inspire me. Yeah. Like, people that I've met multiple times that just happen to be sharing of themselves in a way that is unique and wonderful. So, yeah, I guess I'm hopeful and optimistic about the effect that that can have on the population who, like you said, most people don't personally know a trans person, but a person can have a million followers on Instagram and be posting rad stuff all the time.
Yeah, so. That's absolutely true for me as well. It's like, I feel like I've learned so much directly from people talking about themselves on TikTok and on Instagram. You can almost learn more, you know, in 3 minutes on TikTok than you can in, you know, all of cinema history that this movie looks at. You know, Hollywood's had these gatekeepers forever, and they control what is on screen, and social media completely breaks that down in a beautiful way. So yeah, I think that's a great note, and maybe a good place to end on is, I mean, as with anything, go to the people, listen to the people who are, you know, have the experience. That's why this documentary, I think, is really strong. It has trans people talking about their experiences. That's why I didn't want to be alone talking about this movie. Have someone who, you know, has something like these experiences that can weigh in on it. So yes, listen to the people in, when it comes to any kind of marginalized group, listen to the people in that group first, I think.
Absolutely.
Well, that is Disclosure. Thank you so much, Evelyn, for joining me for this. I think it was a really great conversation, and I can't wait for people to hear it.
Thank you. Have fun.
Huge thanks to Evelyn Landau for coming on the show for this. I really, really loved that conversation, and I'm so, so thankful to her for coming on the show and sharing all of that. I will link to Evelyn's short film, Cautious Birth, in the show notes. Please take 7 minutes and check that out. Well, on the next episode, we'll return to our previously scheduled marathon, looking at films made in Technicolor. Rance Collins will be back to finish that marathon up with a look at the 1948 film, The Red Shoes. And that does it for this episode of Arthouse Garage. Thank you so much for listening. We've got a few years worth of episodes now. You can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at www.appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, leave a rating or review in your podcast app. Or you can buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter by going to arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening, and until next time, keep it snob free.